And we are live. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Owen Explains It All, here with Owen Casey Stevens. How are you doing, sir?
Hi, folks. I'm doing good. Just a whole bunch of moving parts to my week.
I understand. Let's play the intro first so we get one of the moving parts out of the way. Just a second. It always reminds me of like Night Flight on USA Network back in the late 80s.
Up all night.
Exactly. And so here we are on Owen Explains It All, where Owen Casey Stevens dissects a recent pop culture thing and tells you how you can bring that fun to your tabletop, maybe in Starfinder, maybe not. And what are we talking? Oh, freaking co-host Jacob Blackman right over here. How you doing, Jacob?
Hello.
So what are we talking about today, Owen?
So we're talking about Star Wars Visions, which for people that don't know, it is one of the very few, let's say, out of continuity projects that Disney is currently doing with Star Wars, where a bunch of different animation studios with a bunch of different creators were each given the opportunity to do a Star Wars short that is inspired by Star Wars, but need not stick to the existing rules, continuity, storyline of Star Wars. So there are a bunch of different kinds of stories. There are a bunch of different styles. They were allowed to unleash their creativity and kind of do whatever they wanted to do. And that is, for me, a super exciting way to see what can you do with Star Wars as an inspiration that isn't necessarily exactly Star Wars, which is very much like what we are constantly recommending people do. Here on Owen Explains It All, right? This is a great chance to say, hey, this is what a bunch of professional storytellers took elements of Star Wars and made something that isn't quite just Star Wars. Definitely inspired by Star Wars, but I'm pretty sure you will never see the spinning block lightsaber umbrella of death in a live action or official animated Star Wars series. I think that's the sort of thing you're only going to see here, but they did a lot of fun stuff with it, including... obviously things that we'll be talking about that have spoilers. So if you want in these, each of these stories is in fact its own continuity. I believe there are 9 of them. They're not related to each other, but wow, are a lot of them set up with an obvious hook for a sequel or an ongoing series of stories set in those same discrete universes. So I strongly suspect that they are at least looking for the possibility of a season 2 and season 3 of Visions, which may take at least some of these stories and move them forward.
Well, actually, so,
if you want to see this first set without spoilers, stop listening to us real quick, go watch them over on Disney Plus, and then come back.
And all right, you have been spoiler warned, so beyond this point, it's not our fault. The character from the very first one, the duel. The guy who, the wandering swordsman who isn't a Sith and isn't a Jedi, but he apparently has been greenlit for a novel
coming out. That does not surprise me in the least.
Yeah.
That was definitely one of the best of the shorts. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the most interesting characters. And I think this is really smart on the part of Lucasfilm, right? First of all, they can inject a whole bunch of creativity into their system. Mm-hmm. Because you get people that have not done Star Wars before. And let's face it, Asian culture and animation and samurai movies, those were all a lot of the inspiration for Star Wars to begin with. So sort of going back to people more directly connected to that pool and saying, hey, here's some toys that we built based on your playground. Would you like to play with them and make yet another set of toys? I think is a great way to see different directions you can take this stuff. But I also think it's anything that is really cool or really popular, anything that there is a general found outcry that, hey, we want to know more about this. Obviously, Lucasfilm is in a position to make more, be that novels, or they could set games in these eras. They could do live action movies based on these eras. They could do live action series on Disney Plus if they wanted to. And with the Star Wars Visions tag, they are set up to say, hey, this looks a lot like Star Wars, but it is not exactly normal Star Wars.
Yeah, and go ahead.
Multiversal and alternate world seems to be the theme recently for a lot of things. We're seeing it with What If and Marvel. We're seeing Visions here. Star Wars and even Dungeons & Dragons recently has been announcing a lot of multiversal things for their game. So what you can do and infinite possibilities are really being encouraged these days, which is just wonderful because so many people are get really hung up about continuity and what is official and what is not. And sometimes you just don't want to have to worry about what's official. You want to worry about what's fun.
Yeah. On Mondays when I'm not doing this show, I'm doing What the What with Stan and the Disembodied Voice of LJ. And our last show was about canon and for a role-playing game and other geek venues, but especially role-playing games, what does canon mean? And of course it means something very, very different for a role-playing game because in a animated series or a movie, canon is what already exists that the creators are going to build on, that they have established this is what is true. In a role-playing game, we can establish it's true all we want, but once it gets to your table, if you decide, hey, I want in my Starfinder game to decide that all Shirin are actually the reincarnations of the dead bugs from the Starship Troopers movie, we will never say, hint, suggest, or link to that idea in any official Starfinder or I think even any third-party Starfinder product. But if you want to do that, you have just created the canon for your world, and not only are you free to do that, it is in its own regard a good thing. So I think showing people sort of professional levels of what different takes of the same stories and the same tools and the same aesthetics can look like is a good thing, and I think it can inspire a lot of people to... You know, maybe you don't want Jedi, but the idea of samurai that have a katana that has been passed down through their family that happens to glow with an energy field and do everything a lightsaber can do, maybe that strikes you differently and you want to play with that. Or maybe you're going to make all of your druids who have flame blade end up sounding and acting like Jedi and wearing the robes and whatever you want to do. Being inspired by a wide range of media helps what you're doing not become a rut, not just get stuck in the same thing over and over again where everyone's like, oh, this is the 14th dungeon that sounds exactly like Mordor. Okay, great. Well, go see if we can find the book with the dead dwarves all around it.
They dug too deep again.
we actually had that line come up in our last tabletop role-playing game in a Starfinder game. Someone said they dug too deep and too greedily and they released a Balrog. The Balrog is not made of mithril, so you can be digging for one thing and come up with something else. It was an allegory. So I was super excited to watch this, and I will happily admit that these were kind of hit or miss for me. I loved the first one. I was very fond of a lot of them. They were, even the ones I did not enjoy, were all things that had something in it I thought was cool. And so that is sort of the thing I want to focus on for purposes of the live part of this show, and then a little towards the end, I'll get to what I'm going to do in my blog post tomorrow. Even when there were some that I thought, hey, I'm not really super into, say, this animation style or the storyline they're going with here, or this feels a little bit too much like anime I watched in the 80s that had been badly dubbed by college students and nothing makes sense. And I don't know if nothing makes sense because making sense wasn't part of the point, or if nothing makes sense because it is coming from a very different culture than mine. And so I'm missing the connections that would be obvious otherwise, or does nothing make sense because the creators weren't worried about anything making sense. But even for those shorts, because there were some that felt like that, there would be a moment where it'd be like, now that's cool. That's a cool idea. That's a cool thing. I like how that looks, how that sounded, how it played with. And as I've noted sometimes with doing bad movies as sources of inspiration, if something is just stylistically not my thing, being able to select from a different style to draw from gives me a source of different options. And, you know, here we're looking, when that character first showed up, someone said, well, what kind of droid is that? And they said, it's an astromech droid with a hat. and lo and behold, it is, in fact, an astromech droid with a hat. And there is no reason whatsoever droids can't wear hats. There are even some practical reasons why a droid might want to keep the sun out of its eyes or keep rain from getting in between its joints, or there are all sorts of, and or it could just have a sense of style, right? But I don't think in any Star Wars media ever, I can't recall ever seeing a droid wear a hat before, even once. So that one tiny thing, it's a droid with a hat, and that changes everything. You can take that and carry it. And the closest I think I can think of is that there was a Cylon named Red Eye that had a cowboy hat in the original Battlestar Galactica, right? That's as close to a droid in a hat as I can come up with off the top of my head. And I have not memorized all Star Wars media, so there could easily be a droid with a hat in a cartoon or in the background or whatever that I just didn't get. So that ability to look at even a single thing and think, oh, that one little, you know, that is not the major character from that story. But you can look at stuff and say, what did they do here that I've never seen done before? And what can I take from that and make changes to my game that don't even require rules, right? I could easily see saying, hey, hats and magnetic clamp-on umbrellas are super common for droids in this particular planet where there's a lot of silt and magnetic dust in the air, and it gets carried down by rain, and it's raining. It's like Seattle. It's always drizzling. And so you can really fluff out this area of the world and just say, yeah, it turns out it's important not to get stuff wet here for these special circumstances. So even things that, you know, my powered armor is obviously designed to survive on a number of different conditions. Oh, but this world is even worse. And maybe it's not mostly an issue, but maybe if something sits out there for weeks or years, then it becomes an issue. So the locals just throw umbrella clamps on everything. And then you can do the cool stuff like, you know, someone turns on a light and you see their umbrella is glowing with the light, or you can have umbrellas that have secret blasters hidden in them, or that's how you have a smuggling ring. That all comes from looking at this one concept and saying, how can I apply that in lots of different ways to my game? And I think being inspired to try new and different things by watching sort of professional levels of trying new and different things is a great takeaway from that series. And it's the part that excited me the most about watching the whole thing.
Cool. Gotta say the first one I really loved the most, and like you, it was kind of hit and miss for me. But there were a few moments I was like, WTF, like spoilers, when there's a Tusken Raider as one of the guards at the first village. I'm like, well, what's he doing there? But, you know, like you say, it was just for fun.
They had an Ugnaught riding a Imperial probe droid whose arms were all ending in katanas. I mean, that's just creativity.
Yeah.
If only he was wearing a trench coat.
Katanas and trench coat, Ugnaught style. But then, you know, you run into the question of who's to say that Tusken Raiders never go to space, right? We've seen Jawas in space a lot, and they were on that same planet, Tatooine. One of the comics had a Tusken Raider who had turned out to be force sensitive and had been found by a Jedi and taken to a Jedi Academy in the prequel era. So you can even do things like, you know, there are a lot of styles that will start in one place and become popular. So you could even do the thing was like, oh, it turns out that Tusken is in this year on Coruscant. Someone did a big fashion show, and now a whole bunch of mercenaries to look tough are putting thimbles upside down on their head and wrapping themselves in bandages.
Yeah. Given the scope and expanse of something like Star Wars and how many worlds they haven't even touched on, you know, style and how things work can vary. So even in an official Star Wars game, you could have fun elements like this because, you know, if your world is far enough removed from the rest of the galaxy, you know, it's had its own evolution. So you can do what you want with it. And that's the glory of these games.
Well, there was a Star Wars fighting game back in 97. Which basically it was just a button master beat 'em up, but you had random characters you wouldn't have thought would be duking it out with, say, Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, like, for instance, a Tusken Raider.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just kind of sort of like a kid going to his toy box and saying, hey, wouldn't it be fun if the Tusken Raider fought Boba Fett? And why, yes, it would be. It doesn't make any sense narratively, but, you know, Star Wars doesn't always make sense narratively, even in the canon movies. So, you know, it's all right to have fun with it.
Well, and, you know, I hate leaning on the canon prequel movies to support anything, but you do have events in there that simply change what one considers a normal Star Wars story. The other thing that I really enjoyed about this was how many different types of stories they told. So, I mean, the first one is a pretty straightforward, or at least seems to be a pretty straightforward duel, but you've got a family conflict that is played in a way that Star Wars normally doesn't, right? Normally family conflict in Star Wars is my dad's a Sith. And that's about as, and I kissed my sister. And that's about as much family conflict as they get into. But here you had sort of dynastic changes and questions of what is real family and who deserves to inherit the heirlooms. But you also had some family of choice things. One of the stories that I was not a huge fan of the story, but I took a lot away from it that I liked, basically has a Padawan survive Order 66 and end up as the lead singer in a Hutt rock band. And again, tons of spoilers. That Hutt has been specifically not joining Jabba the Hutt with the syndicate that Jabba runs because that's no fun. And as a result,
he just wants to rock and roll.
Yeah, he just wants to rock and roll. And so he and his band of meddling kids have their own spaceships and they're going around and they're doing rock shows and they usually have to flee because Jabba sent someone after them. And the end of that story is not about getting into a big fight to rescue the Hutt that has been captured. It's about showing up at a public execution, convincing the Hutt to let you play one last song and then kill you all, and being so good that you offer to let the Jabba, who's a mobster, be your promo guy and get a cut, and that turns out to be more appealing to him than killing you all because one Hutt wouldn't get in line and join the syndicate the way he was supposed to. And that is a non-combat major story plot resolution that you just don't see very often in Star Wars stories. And a little while ago on my blog, I did some rules for Battles of the Bands for Star Wars or Starfinder. I took the Starfinder chase rules and reskinned them to be Battle of the Band rules. And one of the things I realized watching this particular Star Wars Vision short is that while those rules work great for Battles of the Bands material, they would not allow you to do that exact scene, which is we get the crowd on our side, we impress people, we're altering the mood. So I think if you're going to actually do a band on the run storyline, and you know, Bith musicians were in the very first Star Wars movie with the cantina scene. So that Star Wars has deep, deep, deep roots in musical characters. I should take these Battle of the Bands rules and blow them up just a little more so that you can also use them to overcome band challenges. And that'll be the article tomorrow. I will take these existing rules and I'll expand them a little bit so you can say, hey, you got to get the crowd on your side. There's step one. And then once you get the crowd on your side, you've got to convince Jabba that you are good enough that he can make more money doing that than he will by keeping everyone in line by executing a band member. And once you've got that sort of challenge rules, hey, here are the steps, this is what has to happen, then the GM can use them for anything, right? We've run into a haunt where a Bith Wailer band all died and they never got to play their last song, and as a result, they have turned into dark side ghosts. Okay, great. Find the music. Now you have to survive playing that song for them to a level that they are satisfied. You can use that to resolve any music-related thing once you expand these rules to not just be band versus band, which is how they work now, but have a bolt-on that says, hey, this is how you can make it band against circumstance so the GM can set up music band-related challenges.
Well, this year just one short step away from Scott Pilgrim for Starfinder. Or Josie and the Pussycats for Starfinder.
Yeah, so both of those are things I want to be able to do, right? I think there is a lot of fun play space in being the band of meddling kids, and maybe sometimes you do end up having to have a fight, right? I've done a kind of music soul-sucking wraith occasionally as a plot idea I've put out. Maybe sometimes you got to whip out the flamethrower bolt-on on your keytar and actually get into combat. But Starfinder has a geek keytar as a piece of equipment in the armory. It is the only Paizo product to ever have a keytar in it. Paizo has done some famous band-related stories for Starfinder. There are people that are huge fans of the icon as a concept. So I think it is worth taking that one step further and turning this into a kind of fully supported rules subset that you can say, hey, and then once I do that, you can also say, okay, for you all, it's not a Battle of the Bands. We're going to do the great Akaton bake-off where you have people from all the different parts of the Pact world having to make cakes. And this is a competition, and that's the focus of our entire storyline. And we're going to borrow from the Food Wars anime more than Star Wars. But this really inspired me to want to have those rules be able to cover that. And that is why I thought it was worth talking about them, not just as, hey, be inspired, but here's a specific rules element that currently Starfinder doesn't support, even though I've done Battle of the Band stuff it doesn't support. So tomorrow on my blog, we'll put out the support for that. And then if you want to set people up so they've got to do a musical gig to overcome a challenge, whatever that challenge is, we'll have rules for it.
See, I'm all about this because I'm back here chuckling this entire time. I am currently running a space fantasy game. It's in 5th edition, not Starfinder, but it is a space fantasy game. And the premise is they are a band. The PCs are a band, and they're going from gig to gig. The most recent one I did is they had to go to a gig and afterwards smuggle out someone from the planet.
Yeah.
But they were just paid to be there as musicians. And so it was wonderful.
And there are tons of stories of adventure with the band as the primary protagonists. Mm-hmm. Some are better than others, right? You can go to, say, Kiss versus the Phantom of the Park, and that is maybe not the best example, although I gotta say, when I saw it as a child, I was very moved by the narrative possibilities there, and I have played with things that goofy before. But I'm also, you know, Rock and Rule, which is animated, is one of my very favorite movies, honestly, and it is a movie about a band and the breakup of the band and the power of the voice and magic and friendship, and those are stories that require the ability to do extraordinary musical things. If you wanted to do Robotech, right, you could be inspired by that to have combat music in the Lin-Manmei fashion, where this music is an important part of winning the war. So I think there is a ton of material to draw from. Rock and Rule is very close to science fantasy. Certainly, I think one could make the claim that Robotech is more science fantasy than science fiction. It's a soft science fantasy because you don't have, you know, sorcerers, but you do have giants and micronization and bardic music being the way you defeat an entire army. So there are a lot of elements in there.
Cool. And I want to acknowledge RPG Luminary John Lighthouser is in the comments saying, I love the Sabersmith episode. It could easily be a movie. And I would agree. That was one of my favorites too.
Yeah. It could be this movie. Yeah. And I honestly, as a story, it was not one of my favorites. But as a idea for a story in Star Wars, I got a lot out of it. And that's what inspired me to cover that for this episode. And I think, you know, if we can create a flexible set of using skills to overcome challenges, rules, as I said, I'll write it up for baking, once you've got there for a music, once you got that, you could do it for baking or you know, being a lumberjack or whatever, skiing. You can do all of those. Hey, you've got to successfully win the boat regatta so that you can prove to your grandfather that he should save the family's clubhouse rather than turn it into an office building. There's a whole world of
Space Olympics.
Sure, Space Olympics, sports. I mean, there are, if you look at anime, there are action-driven anime stories about people who cook or ice skate or play tennis, where the ability to do that is just doing that well, super important. And that's without even getting into sort of the hybrid things like Shaolin soccer, where, yes, you have to have rules for playing soccer, but you're also actually attacking each other with kung fu moves. And one of the things I like about the chase rules for Starfinder as a basis for these things is that it's specifically set up so that, okay, you may be taking actions to make progress on this chase, which is whatever skill we need it to be, or you may be shooting at people or being shot at. You can do alternate those or do both at the same time. It can become blended. So you can use those rules for a pure, if you wanted to do pod racing, right? You could, we actually, this classic sci-fi music, we actually had that poster up on the wall of one of the Starfinder offices at Paizo, along with a similar one with the original Star Trek character or Star Wars characters with, you know, Princess Leia on the guitar and such. So I really think it's an area where Starfinder, once we expand into it, we well more than double the numbers of stories that we can tell, even without getting into the doof and the doof wagon following Furiosa and Mad Max in the most recent Mad Max movie. And that's really all I have to say about it. I'm super excited. It's sort of forgotten how much I love those stories, and it's super easy when you are writing or working in a role-playing game or role-playing an adventure to say, well, these rules handle fighting really well, so everything should be based around fighting. And that cuts you off from a whole nother set of narrative options. And if you make those rules a little more interesting and a little more dramatic and a little more flexible, you're giving the GM a set of tools where he can do either, he can say, hey, just like we've had the one underwater adventure and we've had the one jungle adventure and we had the one urban adventure, we're now going to do the one Ren Fair festival adventure where singing how many of them can we make die at the top of your voice is the best way to get people on your side and overcome the issue. Or you can, if it's robust enough, anchor an entire campaign, a whole series of adventures, everyone's character concept on. At least half the time, what you all are going to be doing is engaging in this conflict resolution mechanic to out-sing, out-musify, out-dance, whatever. Yeah, that's the Star Wars one. We had that up.
I love that
question. To overcome things in these other ways. So I'm excited to have been reminded of that as a concept, and I'm already halfway there. And it's a great example of how you can do something that seems like a great game design, right? I wanted a battle of the band rules. And it just didn't occur to me that once I'd gone that far, it's only one step farther to having full musical skill encounter resolution rules.
Yeah, it's, and like you said, a lot of stories. We said Scott Pilgrim or pod racing or, you know, the old classic ski movie where you've got to try to, you know, the working class kid has to beat the snob kids to save the community center. You know, it's there's tons like that. And we are over time, sir. I promised you a short and punchy 30 minutes, and we are at 34.
Well, we started late, so we're only at 28 of broadcasting, so I think we're good.
All right, fair enough. All right, so check out owencaseystevens.com, where an accompanying blog post will be going up soon. I'll include that in the show notes when it goes live. And any closing thoughts, Owen?
When you're being inspired by things, if the rules don't handle it, don't be afraid, even if you're not a professional or even an amateur game designer. Don't be afraid to either hack the rules yourself or look to see if someone else has done it. Go to your players and say, hey, I want to try this thing out. And if it's terrible, then it'll be a dream sequence. Don't worry about it. But I would really like to be able to run an adventure where possibly it's a competing fundraiser and you're trying to get more money than those Nova 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 kids here at Galaxy High.
Cool. That sounds like fun. Jacob, closing thoughts before we wrap it up.
If you are interested in other alternative Star Wars world ideas that are like but not exactly Star Wars, I recommend you check out the Hunter's Moon series of books by frequent Banff co-host Wolf Rebillard. They are available on Amazon for Kindle, audio, paperback, and it is very much like looking at a different Star Wars universe. They have space wizards, you've got stormtroopers. It's just a little different and all fun.
More of a military sci-fi take on the sort of sci-fi space fantasy concepts. I just finished the first book a couple weeks ago. I got to write my review. I owe that to Will. But yeah, and check out Owen Casey Stevens on Patreon. The URL is right there on your screen, just patreon.com/OwenCaseyStevens. And we will see you in 2 more weeks when, once again, Owen will explain it all. So thanks, folks. Take care.